Roman, you saw a movie with Godzilla and King Kong in it.
Oh, how was it?
Is it a spoiler to tell us who the bad guy is?
Well, it depends on what you've heard.
Just what was in the trailers, and I don't think that they say anything in the trailers.
Who's the bad guy in it?
They don't really. Well, it's not Kong or Godzilla, because they team up like buddies.
Right. Who is the bad... Is it Mothra? Oh, it's Ghidorah.
Nope. Mechagodzilla.
Nope.
Who is what? It?
It's a new kaiju.
Oh, I want to go. I want an old one.
Lame.
Lame. What's its name?
What the hell is its name? Something Scar.
That's stupid.
Did he choose that name?
Yeah. Is it a monkey?
Yeah, what is his name? King Scar? No, it's not that. I already forgot his name.
Wow. So it was a good one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's such a stupid movie. It's so much fun.
Is it good?
Oh, it's not good. Well, it's good.
Scar
bad.
King? I mean, Scar King.
Scar King. That's what. Okay. Ooh.
He's but, yeah, a giant monkey.
Well, he's not a monkey. He's an ape.
Jesus Christ, Jeff.
It
get your shit together.
It always comes back to this. So is Kong...
Monkeys have tails.
Is Kong a kaiju?
Well, technically, Sasquatch is a kaiju. A kaiju just means strange beast.
Oh.
Daikaiju means giant strange beast. But yeah, we all use kaiju to mean
I
big
don't
monsters.
Think monkeys count as kaiju.
They do when they're enormous.
No, I don't think...
If they're die, they do, but they're not monkeys, Jeff. They're apes.
Yeah,
right.
Monkeys have tails.
Monkeys
if we learned anything.
Monkeys mean all hairy pre-humans.
Oh. No, that's the...
Your butts, guys. Hold on to your butts. This is happening. Comics Place presents a perfectly acceptable podcast. We're coming. It's a rough landing. Oh my God. Make sure you're holding on because we went from very casual to very serious. Oh my God. The G's we're pulling right now. And by G's, I mean comic book G's because this week you are surrounded by three comic book G's.
Yo,
I am
yo,
your first
yo.
Comic book G. I'm Jeff, and yo, darn it, sup?
I'm G2 Django, the only one with a G in his first name.
Oh, far out.
Far out. And that's Roman, G number three, known to function.
Yo, I'm Grandmaster Roman.
Wow. Okay. So, right. That serves as your introduction to what it is that we've all gathered here tonight to do. First of all, we're going to discuss comics. Then we are going to have a vote, a meeting vote, where you, the listener, get to enter into a clandestine space with the three of us and cast a vote. God damn it. I'm trying to get to my voicemail and I went to the drive on accident and I can't
it's
get back
trap.
To my...
It's a trap.
After all of that, we're going to spend some time spitting on each other. So after the league voting session, we'll all get together into a circle and spit on each other and just have some spits together.
Just like my college days.
Oh. Oh, right. I bet you can't hear it because I haven't shared my screen yet.
Oh, that's the right way to say it, bud.
I haven't done that yet.
Hello and happy episode number 347, my friends. Hey, in this wonderful town we call Bellingham, there's a Lego design for the old City Hall Whatcom Museum that was submitted that I know myself and Django and several of us are excited about potentially getting voted on for becoming an actual Lego set. It's a long shot, but it's fun. But it left me wondering, what is your guys' dream Lego set? You know, if you could take any building or something from your childhood, anything at all that you would love to see turned into a Lego set, I'd love to hear it. Turn up, love you guys, awesome. And before you answer that question, I'd like to hear Django do a buckshot right now.
Oh, nice. Oh, I got my clock out. That was really good.
Well, I want to talk about Void Rivals number 8 by Robert Kirkman. and Lorenzo Di Felici falling off this series. It's not terrible, but it's losing me. So I hope future issues get the masks off so we can see their smiling faces a little bit more or something. I don't really know why I don't like it very much. Also, I finished the final issue of Traveling to Mars, which I guess maybe we were going to talk about more in depth, but I'm under the gun here, ladies and gentlemen.
This is good. I love it, Will.
It's more just modeling Mark Muscle. And I think this guy, he's been telling me every time I see him for like a year, oh yeah, this one goes to 11. And every single issue I've thought, nah, this has to be the last issue. There's no way they can keep this guy alive any longer. And
when you say goes to 11, you mean like really turns it up? Like,
no, it goes to issue 11. This is the final issue. Issue 11 is the end. And he kept saying it to me, and I kept being like, nah, that can't be right. Arguing with the creator of the thing. Man, I didn't read a ton of comics this week, but I can tell you that I read Love Everlasting number 14. And Love Everlasting number 14 gives us the most in-depth behind the scenes of what's going on here that we've had so far.
Will, applaud you. That was really good. I love other people getting involved with putting Django on the spot for a buckshot. This is very good.
Son of a geez.
Django, what was the first one you mentioned that has Lorenzo De Felici art?
Void Rivals.
Oh, okay,
are you keeping up with Void Rivals?
I am. I forgot that was this week. I am keeping up with it, and I don't super disagree with you. A lot of the interest for me for that originally was its ties into like the Energon universe. And that seemed to just be issue number one, and then a tiny little bit of background stuff, or like in issue three or four or something. But we haven't really gotten much from that yet. I do like the story, and I like the characters. And in classic Robert Kirkman fashion, you know, you only get kind of small bits at a time, but they're quick issues, and they're a delight. So I'm totally on board for it, and I do really like it. But it's not reaching the same levels of excitement that it was for me earlier on.
Yeah, I'm going to give this one a 7. I don't know if you read this one yet. But
I did. Yeah, I'm going to give it an 8. I forgot that it had come out, so I actually didn't have it here yet.
Are you reading it, Roman?
I'm going to read. I'm going to give it a 7 as well.
Okay.
Because I read it, and what's going on? I mean, the two main characters are on the run again, and I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to like it more. But
yeah,
I also, let's see. Yeah. Did you guys read Traveling to Mars or Love Everlasting?
Yes. No. Yes.
Well, you really got him on his toes with this. I like it. You can't see, but he stopped eating his apples.
How do you like these apples?
They were pretty good. They were Granny Smith's.
I would give Traveling to Mars probably 7.5 for this issue and a 9 for the whole series. And I would give Love Everlasting. This is an interesting issue. I'm going to give it an 8.
Nice. You didn't get to really fully express. You said we get to peek behind the curtain. Do you have any insight into potentially how long this book is going to be yet?
No, I mean, this is issue 14, and it ends in somewhat of a cliffhanger. So I would guess we're getting at least 15, probably more like 20 is my guess. Yeah, it's the first like real cliffhanger since the first issue, I think.
I love the question about a Lego set, and I'm particularly excited to hear Django's answer. I think it would be really cool and not out of the question if they did a replica of Abbey Road Recording Studio or the Apple Music headquarters, to have like the recordings, but like Abbey Road specifically, to have like the different recording rooms and the boards and like the office and going into it. That would be really cool.
It would be really cool. I don't know. I mean, I would love to see some better Indiana Jones sets.
Yeah.
The ones they have are fine, but they're not overbuilt. And I think you could have some pretty cool Indiana Jones stuff, like a Petra that opens up and gives you the end of The Last Crusade with all the puzzles and stuff. Would be so cool. Yeah. I mean, other than that, I would like to see more interesting vehicles, but yeah, I'm going to say an Indiana Jones thing.
Roman, if you could get any Lego set of any place, what would it be? And then could you also tell me what the hell Will is talking about and you were talking about with the museum and Legos that's going on?
Sure. Well, we've got this community Lego display going on the second floor that's different folks and kids in the community that have made Lego sets and they're on display. But I don't have the sheet in front of me. There's some like Lego, I guess they're Lego celebrities or minor celebrities or something, but they're judging it all and doing demos, like as we speak, maybe. And one of they designed a Lego set based on the old City Hall, you know, the Whatcom Museum, the
Yeah.
big red brick building with the clock tower. And now they've put it out there to try and get it approved as an actual to be made into an actual, you know, sellable Lego set,
Okay.
so people can vote on that. I know Django has shared the link and that kind of stuff.
That's
Comics
cool.
Place
I'd
shared the
love to
link.
put a Bellingham Lego
Yeah,
set together. And what would you
before I
like to
work,
have?
let
Sorry.
oh, before I left work tonight, I saw it being built. That they had, you know, the basic core of the building put together and everything. It was pretty cool.
Wow.
Oh man, there's a few different sets. I would mostly fictional ones. I would love to see like a Lego Lucien's library from The Dreaming from The Sandman,
Ooh, yeah. Ooh.
with you know books you can see the title on the spine and pull them out of the shelves, and just a whole very intricate set. And Matthew the Raven is hanging out, and he
Yep.
has, you know, his wings flap and that kind of thing. But I got an Evil Dead 2 Lego set of the cabin with all the. So I don't know how they would do gore and blood and Lego, but that would be cool. And with the moving moose head and stuff and all of the trap doors and things.
Dude, a Hall of Justice from the Super Friends or the Legion of Doom floating skull. I think
Oh,
those would be
Legion of
really
Doom.
cool.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I've
Yeah.
got a
God,
really,
Lego.
I've got a real sick real world one that for some reason I would want to see.
What is
Oh
that?
God, we're gonna get canceled. Apple's gonna yank our stream.
Oh wait, yeah, maybe I shouldn't say it. Never mind.
What is it? You want a Jack the Ripper
Oh,
one?
but I know we can say that it's not real world. It's based on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I want like the
Oh.
Manson family murder scene in Sharon Tate's place, but in Lego.
Yeah, Roman wants to relive that as often as he can. Okay, all right. Thank you, Will, very, very much. William Elmer, realtor and aficionado of Elmer buttholes. No, darn it.
Dang it.
The real okay, wow. Okay, so
He's
that's
going to
not
start
good for
hating this
branding.
podcast. It's going to be great.
Yeah, you're not the William Elmer from the Appcast, are you? We got some comic books to talk about, gentlemen. So it's a good point. Django mentioned it, and you just sort of mentioned it. We had a gangbuster week of comics last week, and we had a week of comics this week that was not bad by any means, but smaller in volume and score level for me than last week's comics. Where yay or nay, gentlemen? Yeah.
Yeah, weird week this week.
Yeah. Yeah, but we do have a slew of number ones that all came out under an umbrella together, and a couple books to check in on, and I read a couple things worth mentioning. So I suppose we should get into it. And I think the most t noteworthy thing that came out this week, my good fellows, is the Ghost Machine stable of books. Redcoat, Geiger, and Rook Exodus. Did you fellows read all three of these?
I did.
I'll rook you. Yeah, I read him.
Okay. Well, Redcoat and Geiger are in a shared universe called the Unnamed Universe, and Rook is a different universe. All three books are written by Geoff Johns. Redcoat with art by Brian Hitch, Rook Exodus art by Jason Fabok, who he'd done Three Jokers with, and Geiger continues that series, which has art by Gary Frank. Where do you guys want to start?
We should start with Redcoat.
I like that. Let's do it.
This is a story by Geoff Johns and Brian Hitch. Starts in 1775, and there's like kind of a scoundrel who's telling everybody the Redcoats are coming, and we find out eventually that he interrupted a seance. Oh, by the way, we're going to spoil some comics here.
Yeah, we are.
He interrupted some sort of mystical rite where Benjamin Franklin was going to become immortal, and this guy becomes immortal instead, and he's just kind of a turd.
Dude, I loved that reveal. Like, I loved this Benjamin Franklin naked, tied to a thing. And you're like, it took me a
Willingly.
minute to be like, wait, that's Benjamin Franklin. Like, I didn't, yeah, what a ridiculous premise.
Yeah, and he makes friends with another historical figure at an age that we never really see pictures of him by the end. But this is, man, I was all set to think this was dumb because I don't super care about that era. Like that's a part of history that doesn't really interest me all that much. And I don't usually love Brian Hitch, but I thought that this, everything about this was good. The art even was pretty solid. Yeah, just a good comic and great characterizations of this butthead.
Roman, do you like red coats?
I do, but and I feel bad as a true American. I feel bad because, you know, I'm not supposed to because that was the British.
But they're gorgeous pieces.
But
of
they
attire.
Are. Yeah, they're nice coats, yeah. Nice outfits. I like this too more than I thought I would. It's good and goofy. It's kind of like, you know, if Booster Gold was a immortal British red coat.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, stumbling through history in a different way, in a linear way. But this was fun, and I like the idea that there's he mentions in here somewhere that not only did the colonists steal the land of the indigenous, but stole their mystical rights. So this,
yeah,
whatever they were doing was something that the indigenous came on the East Coast came up with, and I like the fact that like John Hancock shows up right away, and
yeah, kind
of leading this group of founding fathers doing mystical shit in the background.
Yeah, I love alt history stories. Like, that as a conceit is always going to start at a pretty good spot for me.
Yeah.
I think what's really interesting about these three books that came out this week, they all, like, it is not three really similar books by Geoff Johns. Like, each one allows him to stretch his writing chops in a pretty different way. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, this one had some trappings of like a Rick Remender type book, you know, like Scumbag or Holy Roller, sure, or something that, like, you know, kind of funny, or Mark Miller or something, and a little bit irreverent, but good character work and done in a really interesting way. And then also really fun world building. Like, yeah, again, just that alternate timeline thing and this idea of us having kind of stolen their magical rights. And I'm just excited for this. Give me a secret organization that's been around since the dawn of America that's pulling the strings. Like, I love that sort of stuff as well. So I like that they came back at the end of this. And then, yeah, the last thing I want to say is I totally agree, Django. Brian Hitch's art, I'm not really a fan of, but he, for some reason, like, it just takes me a second to be like, okay, I'm going to read a Brian Hitch comic. And then it's
right.
It's never like bad, and it's not irritating and poorly done. It's not my favorite style, but like, it, I don't know. I'm at the point where it doesn't take off any points for a Brian Hitch art. It just doesn't get some of the benefits of like a comic.
I wouldn't say never. For me, he went through, yeah, a huge slump where he could be a deal breaker.
Yep, I definitely agree with that.
I think he earned that from me for a little while, but he's overcome it, and I need to get over myself and just give his books a chance whenever they come out now. Because I do kind of like the art in this one, which is not, mm-hmm, something I would have said about a Brian Hitch book maybe 6 years ago, when he was kind of at my least favorite point. So I'm glad that he's evolving and making stuff that I dig again.
That page where like he gets hit by the ritual, or like, yeah, the moon thing and all the effects are happening on it. Like, I stopped and I was like, that's a fucking gorgeous page.
And the page where he's running away from the blue coats, like,
yeah,
it's a great two-page spread. And his expression is just right there. Like, he's a little bit scared, but also having a good time running away from these guys.
Yeah, I think it was Mark Miller who kind of described his art as like widescreen cinematic, and like his role in the Ultimates was sort of introducing a very like sort of cinematic quality to the comic book universe. And
yeah,
I think that is very true.
Yeah, I agree.
So then the one that blew me away, you guys, and I almost like, I read it like 20 minutes before the podcast and I had been like, I don't know if I'm going to get to this one, is Rook Exodus. And I don't know, I just wasn't super interested in the conceit of it, and the preview pages in the Ghost Machine book hadn't made me super excited about it. This is the one about the folks who have helmets that allow them to talk or control an entire species of animal. But what blew me away was the world building that was done in this issue, and like, yep, the science fiction world building, even to the extent of just like the first page is just like 8 sentences, but it's like this, you get this full alt, you know, future timeline where like Earth has given, you know, is become inhospitable, so people acquire this other planet, and then it breaks down and everyone has to evacuate. Like, they give you a whole bunch of information really succinctly, and you just get this character that's relatively interesting with these helmets that are relatively interesting. But what's more interesting to me is like the idea of Earth evacuating and coming to this colonized planet and all the tech that's built to make life sustainable there, and then realizing that it was going to be inhospitable and all of humanity having to bail and then living on this barren planet. Like, it's just a great conceit of a story to me.
And that, like, the art is gorgeous.
It is. I love him.
And I'm with you. Like, the character design looks video gamey and dumb to me. Like, two things that I don't care for. And about three pages into this, I was like, holy shit, this is a cool comic.
It's
like,
this cool. Is yeah.
Fun. The power that seemed stupid to me, I understand why. And it's super interesting. And I can see like a lot of potential for problems with it and advantages to it and ways that it can be used.
But it also and wasn't then, the forefront of the narrative.
No, but I mean, they were wearing their helmets almost the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a deal breaker for me, but not in this book. It was fucking cool.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that, like, there would be a Saturday morning cartoon show about these people with these helmets that can control animals, and each episode would just kind of be about a different animal interaction or something, you know. And this is like, it was only a part of the story.
Yeah, I thought it was fabulous. Everything about it had me engaged, which was a nice surprise.
Roman, where were you on Rook? Yeah,
it was a nice surprise because, yeah, like you two, the preview didn't grab me at all. But yeah, the world building in this, the fact that we, you know, destroy the Earth with, or at least our ability to exist on it with climate change, and then pretty much do the same thing to this next planet, and the corporation that was in charge of all this just abandons the workers on this planet, and now they have to try and survive. That was really cool. I really liked the flashbacks to our main character's life back on Earth with his dad, and the things there led some real meat to the background, the world building and the corporation and everything. And yeah, the art's beautiful. I like how the coloring's beautiful too. I like how it shifts when the flashback is just different coloring, more vibrant colors than like the end of the book when they're on this barren Exodus planet and his buddy swine with his boars and that whole battle happens. And I like the fact that part of the world building, that the animals that were brought to this Exodus planet, once the world engine starts crapping out the animals for whatever reasons, grow to enormous sizes.
Yeah,
that's just fun. Enormous bears, enormous boars. That's cool.
Yeah, Daikaiju. And I also just
why aren't the crows enormous?
Good question. Small bits of things like, you know, we don't know fully what's happened to cause the evacuation yet, but we are following him, and he's like going into this big hotel, and all these doors have red X's on them, and you're like, oh, maybe there was like an outbreak or something. But he goes in and steals all the groceries and everything, and then leaves and marks a red X on the door, so he's able to keep track of which places he's looted. And so, like, just
specifically the booze.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But just great little bits of like showing me the world and causing me to problem solve and understand it without just telling me it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't quite remember. I think Django mentioned it, why the corporation made these helmets that allowed their workers to control and communicate with different animals. And
it was just part of the terraforming process. Like, in order to build a habitable planet quickly, they had to have game wardens. And so these guys were all kind of in charge of making sure that the animals played nice together on this planet.
Boy, obviously the guy that controls bears has got one up on everybody else.
Yeah. Because bears are the best. And we look good too. And then the third one is Jeff Johns and Gary Frank. And I don't have a copy with me because we were running a little bit lower on that one at the shop. So a third number one for Geiger. First there was the miniseries Geiger, which was like a volume or two. And that was what sort of kicked off this whole Mad Ghost Machine thing. And then when they got this idea, they did the two-issue origin story, so there was a definitive place to start. And then this new number one, just Geiger 2024, is the ongoing series starting again. They've managed to tell three different stories with number one issues, which is impressive for three issues that are number ones about the same character where you need to get the same information across.
Yeah, I felt like this was the least number one-y of all of them, because it's kind of referencing a bunch of other stuff that happened before. And but it's a good jumping on point, whether it's a good number one or not. And you know, the art is good. This character is an asshole who can be kind, or a kind guy who can be an asshole. I don't know which. And the scene where the guy tries to commit suicide is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Just his method and the way that resolves is really good. And this is like one of the coolest character designs ever.
Yeah, it's great.
Just like glowing dude with a skull and a cloak. Like, what else could you possibly want out of a badass?
Yeah, it's, I guess at this point, I'm excited to be reading this series and have it not be within five issues of the first issue. You know, like it's been a lot of not long running things. However, we're at probably 11 issues or something. So especially for an artist that is pretty slow, like Gary Frank, we spent a lot of time at the beginning of different stories for him. I'm excited for this character to be further along. This is the one that felt the least like a number one in terms of the actual issue construction of the three that came out this week. And then also felt the least like a number one because it, we've had enough issues behind it. So pretty excited for more of this story, but not a lot of new ground to tread with it right here.
Probably weirdly, that was the one that I was definitely going to read when these came out. And it was probably my least favorite of the three, which
I
is
think,
weird. Yeah, there's zero things wrong with it. It's still good. And Gary Frank's art is awesome.
Unbelievably good. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah. It just, it feels a little samey at this point. And I hope we get to, I'm sure Geoff Johns has a plan for Act Two. Maybe, or maybe the second part of Act One.
Or
who
maybe
really
a
knows?
Fourth, first issue.
Yeah. Yeah. A little. Let's have some more vignettes, guys. What if we just did a bunch of one shots?
I like the book Geiger because it kind of reminds me of, like, I read the main character as Roman, you know?
Yeah.
Really? He's a little older than you'd think. You know?
He's always wearing a hood.
Yep. He's, you know, generally nice, but also generally an asshole.
Take the sticks out of his back and he Fs SU.
It smells like salt water and clam. Mm-hmm.
Just always burning hot.
Yep.
My two-headed mutant wolf.
Yeah.
With the radioactive insides.
So this is a new line of Image books that we're going pretty hard on. Mm-hmm. We're encouraging people to buy all three of them and offering the people to be able to return them. I can't imagine anybody's going to return them if they read these books because they're solid comics.
Yeah.
I would give Redcoat an 8. What about you guys?
9 for me.
I'll split the difference and go 8.5 on Redcoat.
I would give Rook Exodus an 8.5. What about you guys?
9 for me.
Ooh.
I think I'd give it a 9 as well. It really surprised
me. Nice. And what about Jiger? Jiger?
It's Geiger. Pronounced Jiger. 8 for me.
Mm. Boy, I really like the art. 8 for me.
8 and 8. All right. You guys are consistently half a point ahead of me. Maybe it's because my nap was interrupted today from just situations.
I called him because I had a really awkward thing happen to me and I needed to call Django immediately about it, which is how I roll.
But
I could tell from his voice that he had been asleep and he was no longer asleep because of me. Did you guys read The Last Mermaid number 2?
Hell yeah.
I love this book. Roman, you should read it. I think you'd like it.
I don't like mermaids.
Yeah, I doubt that. I doubt that very much because they would have an interesting anatomical setup to be in a relationship with, and that's the kind of thing that excites you, I happen to know.
Arr, the Nightmariner.
The Last Mermaid number 2, this one. So this book is art and story by Derek Kirk Kim. First issue had kind of, we didn't experience it much at our store, but apparently there was kind of a speculatory boom for it. It went to a second print pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of people had ordered this book. We had ordered more than we had subs for, and I think we maybe just almost sold out of it. But this second issue continues. It's just like a young adult seeming book about a mermaid who's in a mech and she's got a pet axolotl and they need to purify the water for her to be able to drive this thing. And it ran out of water at the end of the first one. And they found a water reservoir in this one and they fix up the mech and they run into a problem. And None of it is like difficult to get through. It's a quick read, but there's just something about it, the pacing, that is very delightful. And yeah, like the cartooning is wonderful. The pacing for, like, you know, the axolotl slurping up these food items, like what the artist is choosing to give time and space to in this story that doesn't have a ton of images in it is very pragmatic, very effective, you know, at conveying emotion. And I think that's what impresses me the most in it.
It feels kind of like, I don't know, like Bone or something like that, yeah. Or Head Lopper, where the creator's sort of taking their time to make a cool thing, and not in a rush to get from point A to point B. Although there is, like, both of these issues have had amazing cliffhangers.
Yeah, they have. And I think I agree with the sentiment of, like, it's not in a rush. Like, it does. It feels like that. Like, the artist is enjoying generating any image that they are for this.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying seeing any of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and it is, it's a really cool, like, kind of digital watercolor really art. Like, Roman, I think that you would like this. It would take you like 8 minutes to read both issues, and I think that you'd enjoy it. I would highly recommend you checking out The Last Mermaid number 2, which I enjoyed a lot. Not quite as much as number 1, but I'm still going with a 9.
I also give this one a 9.
Wow.
Good freaking comic.
Yeah, and Roman, we gave the first issues 10, Django and I both.
Yeah, amazing. I think you should check it out, Romy.
Yeah, I wonder if we have number 1 still around the shop.
We do, and we got a couple of the second prints this week as well. Hey, okay. Do you guys want to check in with our wonderful editor extraordinaire, who we all love and appreciate greatly, Andrew Carlson?
Yeah, let's. Yes. Is he here?
Yeah, he's here. We have a wonderful voicemail because we got voicemails this week, and that means a lot to us, and we're super, super grateful. So keep them coming. Looking at you, Judd Morse. Looking at you, Josh McCormick. Great to have you back. Nick Wankowski, if you're out there. Anybody, send us your emails or voicemails, and you can do that by recording them or typing them and sending them to jeff@thecomicsplace.com. Let's see what Andrew has to say.
Hey, guys. It's the editor. You guys mentioned at the end of the last podcast that Will was the front of the podcast and you needed a back of the podcast. So I am, I guess that's me. I'm guessing.
The podcast butt.
So here I am. Now, the hard part is that Will has asked nearly every question known to mankind. What else do you come up with at that point when someone's been submitting questions weekly for however many episodes, you're just like, man,
what's your favorite color?
What other questions can I
ask? What'd you have for breakfast, Roman?
The best I can come up with off the fly is this. And I guess it's mostly towards Django and Jeff, because I know you guys are more into this than Roman. Picture this. Let's say, you know, I guess this is always what I do. I always put you in a scenario and then ask you what you do.
I like that.
So we're going with it. Imagine you're about to sit down and read some comic books during the time that you normally read comic books, probably the evening, but, you know, maybe you're doing it some other times, and you go to pour yourself a drink, and you find that somehow you're all out of whiskey.
Uh-oh.
As unlikely as that might seem, you're all out of whiskey. What is the next liquor that you go for?
Ooh.
AKA, excluding whiskey, what is a good liquor pairing or cocktail pairing with any comic book? Hope you enjoy that. Signed, the ass of the podcast.
Oh, you made the joke.
I mean, Will's the dick and I'm the ass.
Oh.
That's what I'm putting together.
The podcast.
Right. Well, hope you guys have a good one. Enjoy that question. And maybe I should start a Dear Editor column.
Oh, Dear Editor.
Someone, write me an email. Oh, same email, ooh, but address it to me. Oh, that'll be fun. Anyways, maybe I'll cut some of this.
Bye. Bye, Andrew. Thank you. Okay, all right. So, Django, what's your go-to?
Gin.
Gin.
Yeah.
You like gin?
Over whiskey, or if there's no whiskey, gin's my... If I'm just going to sip on something and hang out, that's what I like.
Gosh, my interest in liquors goes down after whiskey and scotch quite a bit.
Well, yeah, I'm assuming we can't say Scotch whiskey.
Right. Yeah, I just covered my bases. I have enjoyed getting to know. I'm blanking on the name right now, and it's embarrassing because I was just trying to say I've been getting used to it. But rum. The tequila that is in is barreled, that is like, you know, smoky. So it's like the whiskey of tequila.
The
yeah, you got to cut this silence here.
Really, one of Jeff's favorite drinks, actually, right?
It's tequila, I like it a lot.
The mezcal.
Yeah, mezcal. That's what it is. Thank you. Yeah, so mezcal would be in there. And but I mean, I would, so after that, I would probably drop off to a non-liquor thing. I would probably go beer or red wine after those, if I can't have whiskey. There we are. Roman, you're not much of a boozer.
No, and Django took the one I was going to say, because I was going to say gin, because he used to
love
gin. Yeah,
I've actually, I do know you're a gin man.
Yeah, gin martini's nice. Liqueur, I guess, I don't know. I used to love Irish... Bailey's Irish Cream, or not Bailey's. What am I saying? St. Brendan's.
Oh,
for a nice okay. White Russian.
Check this out, Jeff. 90 seconds on the clock. Go! Oh,
whoa! What a chump.
Okay, I read some comics this week, and I'm gonna tackle Batman 145 was this week. Zdarsky and Jimenez. This Dark Prisons number 2. This is like this Joker story. I like this run. I like Chip Zdarsky's run. I enjoy reading all of it. I'm putting this in the buckshot because I don't know how much more we can just keep talking in the main podcast about. Like, yeah, I don't know how much the ending of this run and this storyline is kind of going to depend on how much I choose to incorporate this run into my overall Batman canon and Zur-En-Arr and all that. But that said, I'm enjoying reading it, and we are getting enough quality Batman books that are not the main series that I can forgive this one not being the one I want to write home about the most. X-Men 33. It's just weird watching all the X books tick closer and closer to the end. This is, you know, having that thing happen where like Duggan is writing this and he's also writing Fall of the House of X. So when they're writing the main book, but there's an event happening for that book, it feels like the main book actually stops being as relevant as it should be or something. But, you know, we're just watching these things get tied up, boxes get ticked, and people die, which has been really nice. I also read Sensational She-Hulk number 7, Rainbow Rowell. I just want to say that this book is a delight every time I enter into it, and that's a weird choice of words. This is a romance comic, She-Hulk, Jack of Hearts relationship. I love that relationship.
Time's up, Jeff.
And this whole issue is a very adult conversation and dealing with it in a great way. So, love this series. I give Sensational She-Hulk number 7 a 9.0. I give X-Men 33 a 7.0. And I give Batman 145 a 7.5.
I think it's 146.
Oh, sorry, you're right.
Unless you're an issue behind.
No, you are right. It's just that font. They look similar.
It's okay, Jeff. You can say it's a bad font. Sometimes DC makes bad choices.
It's a bad font.
I thought this was an interesting one. The way that they mixed the artists was interesting. Punchline.
She-Hulk?
No, the Batman.
Oh.
The punchline stuff was not offensive to me. Yeah, I don't know. This was one of my more interested issues from this run so far. That said, I think 7.5 sounds right. Sorry, Chip.
Yeah, I'd agree. 7.5. I mean, I'm liking it, but I still have a little bit of it, but it kind of bugs me that Batman's failsafe, like, which was supposed to be an escape valve, I kind of considered it, or not, that's not the right word, but that, I mean, how does Zur-En-Arr exist, like, become a full personality and take over Bruce Wayne? I just don't quite buy it.
I agree. Let's fucking get into this, you guys. Because, Roman, I agree. The Zur-En-Arr thing, I love the way it was introduced in the Morrison run as, you know, he kind of exemplifies or makes Batman's superpower his preparedness. Mm-hmm. And he had created a backup consciousness for the situations where Bruce Wayne ceases to function, like loss of identity. That's such a different thing than what is being used in this story, you know?
Yeah.
Like a partitioning of personalities, like a splitting of personalities or something, which is not necessarily the same thing as like a backup personality in my mind. And so then the idea that it could have autonomy and time that it's been controlling his consciousness and stuff is such a large retcon. And I like swinging for the fences with retcons, but
yeah. Yeah. And you put it well, cause yeah, this Serenar seems like an altar that's taken over mm-hmm. with fail saves help. And that's not what I mean, not to say that altars are simplistic, but in terms of Serenar, the way it was introduced with Morrison, it seems simplistic compared to that.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Plus, it bugs me in this issue. I'm like, is he playing the long con here? Or because if not,
that's what I think.
Is he so dumb as to fall for this and think this is really Bruce?
Yeah.
There was something a couple issues ago where Failsafe did a good job of trying to convince Damien.
Yeah, like, I think he's still conning Failsafe, and he's going to be like him getting so close and being able to be the thing that
is, you think it's just going to be an off switch
or something. Yeah, restart it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I will also say that like Serenar in the Morrison context felt so awesome because it shined a light on Bruce's superpower of preparedness, this. It takes that away by him having created this thing that then has gotten away from him, much more like the Tower of Babel story by Mark Waid. Mm-hmm. And so it makes what I considered to be a strong point of how awesome he is to now be introduce an aspect of fallibility to him, which minimizes, it being a successful thing originally, because now it's a thing that he can be taken advantage by or whatever. So it's not him being so prepared. I don't know.
I mean, it's kind of, you could compare it to the conversation about AI or really any technology where
right.
it's like, here's this amazing thing and here's how it can go bad.
But, and that's a good point, but that makes me think about the fact that like, yeah, AI, it's not really AI originally, but now it feels a little bit more like AI, like a program mm-hmm. that's gotten away from the creator. And originally that's not what it was,
Yeah.
So like, it seems like a different conversation, but you saying that connects dots for me.
Do you guys want to hear, we have a letter from, or a voicemail from Brian Garside.
Oh my gosh. Three in one day.
It's amazing, right?
We're blessed.
We absolutely should. Yeah. Drinking in the formic acid.
It's about time. Let's see what Bri Bear has to
say. Fellas, it's your 14th favorite Canadian, Brian Garside here.
God,
and I've
love
come
this
to
guy.
Chew bubblegum and chew the scenery.
Oh,
bubblegum.
Okay, Brian, 90-second buckshot. Uh-oh. Go.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, Django. Okay.
Oh my God.
I was not expecting this. Okay. Did you hear What Eddie Gein Done by Eric Powell and Harold Shetter? Holy crap. I know I'm way behind the times on this one because it came out in 2021, but I just read it this week and is absolutely terrific. It's got a ton of incredible tension. Story is absolutely riveting. I started this at midnight one night and I literally could not put it down. It eventually ended up smacking me in the face when I fell asleep and the story has still stuck with me. Sinister Sons number 2, Peter J. Tomasi and David LaFonte on art. Oh my God, this is so hard. This is just pure fun. It's the same level of fun that the Super Sons was back when Tomasi was writing it. Sin Sun, the alleged son of Sinestro. And Lor Zod, the son of Zod, confront each other. It looks like they're going to work together. This is just big, dumb fun, and I really love it. Speaking of big, dumb fun, Outsiders number 5, absolutely love the first 2 issues of the series. And while they haven't reached those lofty heights, Aquaman Kaiju, you guys, it's still been super fun. Kate Kane, Luke Foss, and the drummer entering a shadowy underworld that's full of villains of the DCU doing all manner of horrific things.
Running out of time, Brian.
It's gross and creepy. Let's go with Pacific Comics Companion from Tomorrow's Publishing, written by Stephen Freight. A great overview of one of my favorite publishers of all time, who did Rocketeer, Gru, Star Slayer, Escape Man, and they did it all in like 4 years. Oh, and I'm out of time.
Okay there, Bri Bear. What do you score these things, huh?
Oh, okay, Jeff. Let's see. I will give. Did you hear what Eddie Gein done? Gooey Duck. So that's a perfect 10.
Oh!
Sinister Sons number 2. Wow. I give it like a 7. It's fun, but I don't know if it's perfect. Outsiders number 5. I'm going to go with probably an 8. overall, this series has so much potential, and I'm really, really loving it. And Pacific Comics Companion, pure nostalgia play for me. It's really dense, and I'm probably really got about a third of it to go still. But everything I've read so far, I've loved. So I'm not going to score it right now. But it's like, it's Gooey Duck territory. I love those two Morales books. So yeah, that's it. So that's everything from the Gar side. How'd you like that? A Buckshot. Hey, make sure everyone checks out the Data Bros. We've got another episode coming out next week. This week, all about your favorite sponsor and mine, Murphy's Apple Juice. All right, fellas, I'll see you on the Gar side.
Dude, Brian, that just tickled the fuck out of me. That was really good. I really enjoyed that. AI Jeff, I cannot wait to hang out with you. I want to know you and what makes you tick. And wow. Wow, that was great. I'm just... Everyone, you should listen to the Data Bros podcast because Brian Garside, I'm really happy to get to be playing in a sandbox with that guy. Really cool stuff. Roman, 90 seconds go.
Oh, golly. Well, Jeff, you already said it, but Sensational Hulk, She-Hulk 7, I've been loving this series anyway, but this issue in particular is just amazing.
Stellar.
And just, you know, relationship stuff between her and Jack of Hearts, and it's so well done and so entertaining, and I hope they work it out. Birds of Prey number 8, this is still a very fun series with great art, and Big Barda does a lot of fighting in the nude in this, and it's very clever the way they cover up the Barda bits, since it's not an adult comic.
Should be.
Last Django talked about that. I read a new number 1, Spider-Man Shadow the Green Goblin by J.M. DeMatteis. And you know, it's a good kind of 80s style Spider-Man comic, a lot of dense goblin stuff in here, and I'm gonna keep reading it. Captain America number 8, Legacy issue number 758. You know, I was really digging this book. It's Straczynski, but this second storyline now isn't holding me like the first one did. It's Cap, and there's this mystical cult down in New Orleans, and I don't know, I like Cap and I like mysticism, but I don't know. The two of them don't often go well together, I think. The previous storyline where he was just fighting Nazis and in the current times and in the past, that was much more interesting to me.
The timer just went off. I just turned my phone on to look at it, and it silenced it at that moment. So that's my bad. It's all muting right. You, Django, sadly. Roman, okay, I'm glad you brought up the ones you brought up. I want to talk to you a little bit. So, yeah, the She-Hulk comic, I just loved how, like, adultly they handled... like they're in a relationship and this girl that's important from his past showed up, and the way that like she maturely gives him space and the way that he's trying to figure it out and talking to She-Hulk, like it's an incredible book. I really love it, and I'm glad that like a quality romance book like that can exist, because there's no other good romance comics coming out.
I like the fact that the detail that, you know, they're on this whatever they are, resort planet or whatever, and after her and Jack have this talk, she's like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to go home. But then things happen and she gets stuck there.
Yeah.
So she's like hanging out in her hotel room, doesn't know what to do because she doesn't want to leave because she'll run into Jack and this girl maybe. And it's just felt so realistic being stuck in a hotel room and your weekend's gone to shit. And
I just said that thing about a romance comic because I know Love Everlasting is a quality one that's also coming out. But then you also brought up Spider-Man Shadow of the Green Goblin. And I really wanted to hear your thoughts on that book. Like, did you like it or not? And so you do feel pretty positive about it?
I do. I mean, I kind of read it. Well, DeMatteis's name sold me on it since he always did some good Spider-Man stuff. And I wasn't expecting much out of it, but it's pretty cool. I mean, it recaps... It actually introduces a character that...
Bless or whatever his name is.
That Norman Osborn had experimented on when he was trying to perfect his goblin serum. And he changed this poor guy. And it starts exploring this character and how his life sucks now. It has some good flashbacks to early, you know, like Spider-Man, the first, not even year one, like the first few months.
Yeah. So it takes place a month after he gets his powers, or a month. Yeah. After like Ben is killed. And we get kind of flashback stories like this, especially at Marvel, pretty often. And they always feel a little bit like cash grabs, or, you know, like, I don't know, writing a modern day story back in a previous time. But because it's DeMatteis, it really does feel like a Spider-Man comic from the past while also being good and feeling modern. But like, you know, the Green Goblin story, it's modern. Like, it feels like we're finding out new information, but told in a way that really does feel like older Spider-Man, to the point where, like, there were pages where I was like, you know, really kind of speed reading some of the dialogue. But like, I don't want to hold that against it, because it's kind of the trappings of a Spider-Man story of when he's young like that. And yeah, I think it's a good period to explore. And also, when there's a main Spider-Man book that, while Roman and I enjoy, a lot of people dislike it, to try and attempt to get some Spider-Man books that maybe harken back to a tone of Spider-Man that people consider more classic is perhaps a good business move.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. It's got a great tone to it. Introduces little things that it just feels so natural. It introduces the fact that Spider-Man kind of met Gwen Stacy and Harry Osborn during this, when he was fighting this creature, but he met them as Spider-Man, like, way before he ever met them as Parker, and that's a new twist, but it just feels totally natural here, like it's always been that way.
What do you give your book scores, like AI Jeff would say?
The next issue, it got the Sandman. I love the Sandman. I give this Spider-Man Shadow of the Green Goblin, jeez, I think I'm gonna give it an 8.
Hell yeah.
Birds of Prey, I will give a 7.5. What else did I talk about here? She-Hulk, I'm going to give a 9. I think that's as far as I got.
You got America number 8
Captain America number 8. I'm going to give that a 7, almost a 6.5, but the art's really cool.
We also listen to the iFanboy podcast, and they are our opinions I really respect, and they mirrored yours. Like, they really liked the first arc and then are really bummed out with this current arc.
Yeah, it's a big come down.
Hey, Django, are you keeping up with Sacrificers? The second volume of that started this week.
Believe it or not, that is the only other thing that I read this
week. Well, how did you feel about this issue?
This issue was like, I don't know. I like the art more. I like the setup of the followers and how they're in big trouble. But I don't, if there was an issue that was going to make me probably fall off of this book, this would have been it. I don't think I'm going to. I think I'm going to keep reading it. But I didn't love it. I was super lost with exactly who was who. And maybe that's my fault. But
no, I'm with you. I pretty much agree with that. It's not in jeopardy of becoming a book I'm not reading just because it's Remender and I will stick with him. But yeah, this was kind of a nothing issue. It was mostly a narration that told us some background of some characters. Mm-hmm. And it was narration that was then tangentially related to us just getting a visual story of the Moon character, who was a god who, like, had some bad shit happen to her at the end of the first volume. She gets into some trouble and, like, this pool of black goo, like, enters her. And so if I were to guess, it's maybe kind of like an origin for a big bad character or something, you know, like that was kind of visually told behind a narration.
Seems like an eclipse.
Oh, smart. So like this black ink stuff is like,
it blots out the moon.
Oh, that's smart.
Right. I don't know if that's what he's going for, but that was my thought when I was reading
it. That's smart. I didn't put that together, but that, I bet you're right. That's a cool. I am impressed throughout the series the way that, like, he does visually and narratively tie in, like, solar relationship type things like that. And this is the second time that you've mentioned one that I totally missed. That's cool.
Yeah. I thought that the way that the water god moved in here was really cool. Like, you could see him moving sort of Pirates of the Caribbean style. Like with sloppy water supporting his weight and stuff, like that. That is
formic
cool.
Acid weight.
What
was your score for it?
I'd give this one probably a 7.5. It deserves better than that just for the art, but it remembered all over itself for me.
I give it an 8. Continuing with that half point difference between the two of us tonight.
Yeah. Good comic. And I'm not going to drop it yet, which puts this at one of the longest Remender books that I've read in a long time. Like,
yeah,
about 3 issues in
between this and Holy Roller.
I'm into Holy Roller. Yeah.
You're 13 12 issues in.
I don't know if he's changed something about the way that he's approaching the stories or what, but you know, that for a long time there, I would just drop off partway through one of his series, not out of dislike, just out of disinterest mostly.
Yeah, they do. They feel a little bit less like him working through his shit, feel a little self-indulgent. And these, I would say this current slate of his books do feel a little less self-indulgent in that regard.
And I think the other one that I read all the way through lately was Righteous Thirst for Vengeance.
Oh.
And I think Araujo was probably doing a lot of the, maybe not the plotting, but a lot of the attraction for me, a lot of the storytelling in there. So I think it was more of a team effort and that kind of propelled me forward.
Yeah, that totally tracks to me. Araujo could do that. Roman, anything else for you that you want to shine a light on this week? I'm pretty much near the end of my list as well, Django.
Well, I think I may be near the end of my Immortal Thor, as usual, was
that
great.
Is that still a great book?
Oh, it's still a great book. And now this issue, remember Dario Agger, the Minotaur dude that was heading up that corporation? Well, with the Enchantress's help, he's started his own line of Thor comic, except it's like his hammer's inscribed with Roxxon's something about them, and it's because of the magic of storytelling and, you know, Loki and all that stuff, it's with the Enchantress's magic, this new comic they're putting out is sapping Thor's strength. So that's kind of a clever little thing starting up next issue with I think the next issue of Thor is gonna be pretty much a facsimile of this Roxxon Corporation Thor comic. So
yeah, it's actually a separate series, separate series code, separate subscriber base totally that we've taken here. But yeah, cool. I'll tell you what, Roman, that Dario Agger character showed up in Jason Aaron's Thor run, and that caused me to stop reading it. I think it showed up in Immortal Hulk by Al Ewing, and that was when I stopped reading it. And now it's reading, and he's in Immortal Thor, and I'm not reading it. For some reason, I just don't give a fuck about Roxxon politics in the Marvel Universe. What do you give that one?
Oh, I gave it an 8.
An 8? Okay, yeah, I thought you were about
to
drop.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, the art, the art's
barnacle
really good.
On me.
What issue is it?
Let me find it again. It's issue, oh my gosh, it disappeared into my pile. Let's see.
It's pronounced Pile.
Pile.
Pile? Shazam.
Oh, that's a Roman thing.
Number 9.
Immortal Thor number 9.
Well, it's a cool cover.
Yeah, yeah. It's a fun title.
Hell yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for the emails this week, voicemails. Keep it up, Andrew, Brian, William. We're very grateful. You can get some of that sweet, sweet goodness from the Far Side with Mr. Garside on our weekly podcast, Data Bros, where Django, Brian, and I talk about things.
Data,
comic data, books, running a comic shop, comic book series, reboots, employees. It's more fun than it sounds, actually. Django, unless you got anything, I'm Jeff.
Jeff, I don't have anything appropriate for the podcast. I'm Django.
I certainly don't have anything appropriate for the podcast. I'm Roman.
What were we at the beginning? We were G's.
We're the G's.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
I'm Gagango.
Yo, yo, yo.
Run DM Roman.
Are you the Groman?
The gang green. The green gang.
Groman. Oh, God, he's growing.
Oh, God.
Oh, God, let me out of here.
Oh, my God, no. Oh,
Jesus. No.